argument is United States against Allen. Mr. McQuaid.
May it please the court.
Might want to raise the podium. There's a switch on the right-hand side. That's down.
Did that the wrong way.
Try it again.
It'll come out.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Matthew McQuaid. I represent Patrick Allen in this appeal. Your Honors, Patrick Allen stole $519,000 worth of commissions on computer sales that he was not a part of. He pled guilty to one count of mail fraud with a plea agreement. The plea agreement established an advisory guideline range of 27 to 33 months, level 18, criminal history category of 1. And at that time, there were no enhancements considered.
What was the range again?
27 to 33 months.
And he got how much?
He wound up getting 41 months. There was no sentencing enhancements from the guidelines handled at the plea. The PSI was completed, and probation did not include any sentencing enhancements. At the time of Mr. Allen's sentencing, the court proposed and then applied a two-level enhancement for sophisticated means, finding that Mr. Allen's behavior and his conduct was sophisticated and allowed him to complete this theft, and then reestablished the guideline range of 33 to 41 months and sentenced him to the high end of that guideline range. Mr. Allen is appealing the finding that his conduct constitutes sophisticated means and finds that the court clearly erred in applying that two-level enhancement to his sentence and then giving him subsequently a higher guideline range and a higher period of imprisonment. The definition of sophisticated means in the guidelines calls for the court to find that there was an especially complex or intricate offense conduct pertaining to the execution or concealment of an offense. Now, in this particular case, Mr.
I guess that depends on whose experience you're comparing it to, right?
Well, absolutely, Your Honor. I absolutely, the case law defers to the court's ruling. And I understand the trial court is always probably in the best position to make these determinations. However, I will say, and the argument is basically this, he stole $519,000 over a 13-month period, which is a lot of money. And I think when they included the sophisticated means enhancement, in the way they drafted it, they used the word especially complex or intricate. And I think by using the word especially, they understand that in stealing large amounts of money, which the guidelines does incorporate different levels and different loss amounts, that there's going to be some elevated level of complexity or intricacy when the amount gets higher. In that way, I would think it's just understandable that when you steal more money, you're going to attract more attention to yourself, and you're trying to get away with it. And in order for him to get away with it, he'd have to do or take steps to do that, not just one step, not just two steps, maybe not just one simple step or eight simple steps, but he has to do something more than just a garden variety theft, which is, again, a factual determination, and I'm aware of that. But I believe in this case, that's what it was. It was a garden variety of theft of $519,000 from Hewlett-Packard. That's how he got away with it. Otherwise, he would have been caught right away, or he never would have got off the ground with it if it was so simple, and the theft would never have been consummated, and it would have been an attempt. I believe the key word here is especially. That is especially complex or intricate. Allen found a weakness or a vulnerability in this influencer program with the computer sales. He exploited it with illegal and deceptive acts, deceptions inherent in every fraud, in any fraud. And I believe, and I'm arguing to the court, that his means of execution were basic. And if you look at the, and the government does a nice job of listing, and the court did indicate the factors that he's using to consider to give him the two-level enhancement. He developed an insider contact who worked at HP, and he somehow arranged for this individual to provide him with information regarding the large computer sales. Well, he got an accomplice, and I don't see anything complicated or complex about getting an accomplice to complete a theft. That's what he did. Then he created false multiple identities to serve as persons who allegedly bought these computers. He made up names.
Yes, that device, by the way, was the same device that was used in national student marketing, and it fooled a Big Eight accounting firm, as it then was, and most of Wall Street for a period of 3 or 4 years and cost people billions of dollars. One might think that a scheme, you know, a basic system that does that might reasonably be called sophisticated.
And I agree.
You've seen it work in seven, eight, nine-figure frauds.
It does work. And I'm not arguing, it's factual arguments. We're getting into semantics. I said he didn't create another identity. He just made up a name, and he put it on there. And because Hewlett-Packard wasn't checking up on themselves, that's why he got away with it for as long as he did. As soon as they audited and just realized, look at how much money we're paying this guy, they figured out right away that he was the one who was doing it. And immediately they didn't go to the police with it. They kind of just fired him or said stop it, and then he wound up doing it again. So using the same scheme, creating fictitious email addresses and fictitious telephone numbers. Again, I'm arguing he just made up numbers, made up email addresses. I don't think there's anything complicated or especially complex or complicated to perpetuate this theft. As far as the disguise or the concealment of the money, he had the money sent to accounts in his own name. He didn't create any separate accounts under false names or anything like that. He took the money, put it in his own account, and he spent it, all of it, in 13 months. I'm asking the court, because you can take any factual situation, and I believe what the court did in this case was take the facts and interpret them to find this enhancement level, to give him more time. Clearly the court did not feel that what the guidelines had established the 14-level increase for an offense between $400,000 and $1 million was sufficient to punish him for the amount of theft that he had. But I believe that he took liberties with the interpretation. And I believe that the guidelines indicate that 14-level enhancement for this amount of money is appropriate. I'm asking the court to draw a line, to look at the statute, to interpret the statute when it says especially complex, applying it to these facts, and second-guess the trial court. And that's what I'm asking you to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
McQuaid.
You.
Mr. Deaver.
May it please the court, my name is Jack Dever, representing the government. The district court did not commit clear error when it decided to use the sophisticated means sentencing enhancement for Mr. Allen. The appellant states that there was no mention of sophisticated means in the plea agreement. In fact, that's not correct. There was a most important part of the plea agreement on page 6, which states, ultimately, the facts and law relevant to sentencing and the court's determination governs the facts and law relevant to sentencing and the court's determination govern the final sentencing guidelines calculations.
What, Mr. Dever, with all recognition of what you just said, what does that say about sophistication?
Well, Your Honor, what
it... Maybe I didn't hear it.
Yes, Your Honor, what it speaks to is whether or not this was a complete surprise to the defendant. Now, it was not contemplated...
Well, that's boilerplate language there, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
It just says the judge is going to consider the facts. I mean, there's no focus there, is there, on that?
Yes, sir, it is, Your Honor. Yes, it is, Your Honor. The defense also brings up the fact that there was no mention of the sentencing guidelines handled in the PSI. However, if we look at the PSI, specifically, lines 209 to 213, the factual analysis offered by the probation officer was incorrect. He stated that Mr. Allen included his name and the company's name in the POR forms, thereby not hiding his involvement. What that shows is that the probation officer didn't understand how the scheme worked.
Well, that may be the case, but he certainly didn't say anything about sophistication in the plea agreement, and that didn't say anything about it either. It may have been a mistake. I don't think that's the way you ought to argue this case. You ought to just say that the district judge got it right because he had the right to do the sentencing.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor.
That's Isn't that right?
Yes, Your
well,
Honor.
Well, then, the fact that, I mean, that's a sort of a misstatement about what defense counsel said. He didn't say there was sophistication mentioned, and he's correct, it wasn't mentioned in the plea agreement, right?
That's
the
correct.
Word sophistication wasn't mentioned.
Yes,
but why are you going into that? I don't understand that.
Well, it just goes to the fact that the defense counsel...
The district judge has a right to sentence him based on... clearly, the plea agreement gave him that right. So Do you think it was a sophisticated?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then, why do you think that?
Your Honor, the government believes, well, this fraud is certainly not the most complicated fraud that ever was. When one takes the individual actions that Mr. Allen undertook and put them together, it was extremely complex and intricate. Maddock speaks to the fact that the test is not whether or not a given fraud could have been more sophisticated, just whether or not the fraud as perpetrated was sophisticated. I'd like to focus on a few of Mr. Allen's activities in regards to the sophistication. Firstly, the creation of false identities to serve as the person who authorized purchases of Hewlett-Packard computers on behalf of various entities. He simply invented individuals. Secondly, the creation of fictitious email addresses and phone numbers so that any attempts to verify purchases would be routed back to him. As the district court noted, that's a pretty sophisticated trick. The
would
way
identity,
he,
would what has become all too common, identity theft, constitute sophistication, Mr. Dever? You know, the credit card identity theft problems that are surfacing today, you think that's and the work that goes into, you know, the theft of the identity constitutes sophistication?
I believe it may, Your Honor, depending on the individual facts of the case. If one is simply taking credit card receipts out of the garbage and reproducing them, perhaps not. But in this circumstance, we had an individual who basically cloaked an actual company in a shroud so that any attempt by Hewlett-Packard to contact that company and verify whether or not the purchase has been made would have been funneled right back to
I appreciate the masking. I think that's the strongest part of the government's case. But is it based on the fact that it was done over a period of time? Does that add anything to the sophistication? I suppose it was just a one-time event using all that he did here, that is the emails and the like. Would that, I mean, accepting everything you've said about the indicia of sophistication, but it occurred just once, would that make it sophisticated for the purpose of enhancement?
Your Honor, I believe it would, but I think it would be much closer to the line. And I believe the fact that he was able to perpetrate this fraud for a year under the auspices of AllenNet and then once found out changed to Central Computers and continue to perpetrate the fraud for a given period of time after that, and the fact that the fraud was perpetrated against Hewlett-Packard, a sophisticated corporation, which in fact it hires and has professional fraud investigators on their staff, lends one to believe that the way in which Mr. Allen conducted his fraud was especially complex and intricate. The email addresses that Mr. Allen created were crafted in such a manner to confuse or to fool Hewlett-Packard as well. For example, if he wanted to perpetrate that he was an individual working at UMass, the email addresses would be umass.edu, and he would create a similar email address, umass.org. Clearly not the most sophisticated trick, but when taken in conjunction, once again, it would fool a large corporation or a clerk in a large corporation who was sending information out to that email address. The defendant was actually impersonating or creating quite a few identities at the same time. He had many balls in the air. He was, of course, Patrick Allen himself. He was AllenNet, while simultaneously creating or impersonating the false purchasers for real companies. And in order to do that, he falsified telephone numbers and fax headers so that they appeared to originate from the original buyers. He set up a system to funnel any questions, any and all questions regarding purchasers to him, thereby setting up a system to, as we said before, cloak an actual company so that all information or all questions would be returned back to him. Therefore, while each individual step was not especially intricate, when taken as a whole, the government believes that the district court did not clearly err when deciding that this was indeed a sophisticated procedure. The fact of whether or not Mr. Allen did little to cover up his blatant theft, the government believes that Mr. Allen actually went to substantial lengths to cover up the theft. Again, he created false identities to serve as people who allegedly authorized the purchase of Hewlett-Packard computers. He created fictitious telephone numbers so any attempts at verification would be routed back to him. And he altered phone numbers and fax headers so they appeared to have originated with the computer buyers. Once he was discovered as to perpetrating this fraud under Allenant, he changed his modus operandi and started a new vehicle fraud called Central Computers. I'd like to address the sophistication of the victim, if I may. The district court properly considered the level of sophistication of the corporate victim when it was arriving at its conclusion. There was no definite and firm conviction that the D.C. court, that the district court erred when considering it. If we look at the Rettenberger case, in that case, the defendant faked a neurological illness and was able to hoodwink 14 insurers as well as a skilled neurologist. And that prompted the court to say that that sort of scheme involved intricate maneuvers. Just as a historical event must be looked at in its proper context to get a true understanding of its meaning, so too must a fraud be reflected against the relevant details surrounding its enactment. And in this case, the relevant details are that this fraud was perpetrated against Hewlett-Packard, a large, successful corporation, which, as said before...
I'm puzzled by something like that. Perpetrated against certain people at Hewlett-Packard, but many large corporations have relatively low-education people in routine jobs. The people who were fooled may, for all we know, have been high school dropouts. So why should it matter that they were employed by Hewlett-Packard?
Well, it may be individuals who perhaps were not very sophisticated, Your Honor. It matters because this fraud went on for a long period of time and involved substantial amounts of money. So one would imagine a corporation with the sophistication of Hewlett-Packard, even if there might be uneducated clerks working at the end of a certain email string, would put systems in place, and indeed did have systems in place, because eventually Mr. Allen was caught, which would eventually ferret out this sort of fraud. Subject to your questions, the government stands on its brief.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. McQuaid, anything further?
Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I am finished.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. And Mr. McQuaid, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and the assistance you've been both to your client and the court.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.